Okay, good to go?
Yeah, good to go, man.
Sweet. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Outlaw Picks podcast. Today we are discussing, well, we'll talk a bit about 274. I hope you all caught the aftermath. We'll start doing that for pay-per-views. And we're talking about this one this weekend, which is Błachowicz against Rakic, which should be a lot of fun. We will briefly discuss the prelims as well, because people have been moaning at us. But we're not over-committing to the prelims this time. Although we do know a lot of these fights on this card, which makes life a bit easier. One debutant, which I'm very excited about, which I'll show you a clip of as well. How are you, Jamie?
Yeah, good, man. All good.
Enjoy 274?
Yeah, it was really good. I didn't watch it live, but I caught up on it the next day.
Yeah. Who was your priority on the card? Who did you go to watch first? Did you know the results before you watched
the main event, of course.
You went straight to main event,
did you?
Yeah, I
always go straight to main
event. See, my concern with that is that you go to the main event and then someone in the commentary goes, just like that fight on the card earlier with such and such where he did this. And I'm like, ah.
Yeah. The thing is, though, I actually look at the results before
I
watch
it. Yeah, you're your own spoiler.
Mm.
Why'd you do that? Just
to
take away the excitement, just to make sure you don't get too excited on a Sunday.
Yeah.
Is that keep your heart rate lower?
Well,
you can't go
that.
To church and then come back and get your heart rate up watching cage fighting.
I'm not sure why I do that, to be honest. Maybe just get the surprise out of the way. Yeah. I don't know.
Get the surprise out of the way. Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one. That's a very Carl Pilkington thing to say. I often do that because... So I go to watch sparring in the morning at the gym, which is 8 a.m. So, and I don't stay up anymore to watch the fights, really. And unless there's something that's really worth staying up for, because it just throws off my whole week.
Yeah, yeah.
So I tend to go to bed a bit earlier and then wake up, check the results quickly, and then go to the gym. And because the thing is, I could stay away from everything, Instagram and Twitter and everything, but you walk in the gym and you just know someone's going to go, oh, did you see? You know what I mean? It's almost always the main or co-main event. Mm-hmm. Like one of the fights I'm most interested in because everyone else is interested in it. And so, so I'm just kind of, I don't really worry too much. Often I know the results before I'm watching them now.
Yeah. I think it is that, like, because you have to avoid social media.
Yeah.
Because if I'd go on Instagram, I'd instantly see it straight away.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's probably more for that as well. So I can go on Instagram again.
See, I'd managed to stay away from the Canelo results. As I'd opened Instagram and I was looking to see what had happened in the UFC, I'd seen a couple of boxing things come up because I scroll till I can see the top of the name of the next thing and I don't know whether to scroll past it super quick or not.
Yeah.
So that was the one I'd managed to stay away from. And we got back and I sat down and opened my laptop and V went, and I said, I've got the Canelo fight to watch. And V said, oh, he lost. I'm like, oh, it killed me just for a moment. It's like, oh.
Yeah.
I was disappointed that he lost. It was a weird fight. You watched it, did you?
I only saw the...
Just the highlights.
Highlights.
Yeah, he just didn't look himself.
Yeah, he looked a little soft, like you said. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, there's a point when you go up a weight class and your body just doesn't hold that weight very well. Like, I know, like, my weight's coming down because I've been dieting and getting ready for the fight. And we went out for a run yesterday. And the difference in my weight for, like, 3 pounds is massive. So, like, if you're used to being an elite athlete in a particular weight bracket, that bracket always has a ceiling. And I don't know whether it just looked like you found that scene. I mean, Bivol is a great boxer. He had a fantastic game plan. You know, very well conditioned, very well prepared. You know, like, a really, really good performance by him. But Canelo didn't look the same version that he looked against Kovalev, for example. You know, great fight, though. Really good. I mean, I'm definitely going to watch it again. I need to shout out our sponsors. Quick shout out to our sponsors, Xbrain, xbrain.co.uk for all of your supplements. There's all kinds of brain enhancers and neurotropic. I always get that word wrong. All kinds of stuff. Onnit products, Alpha Brain, etc., etc. This is awesome. This Alpha Brain focus shot. I take one of these whenever I'm going to whenever I'm judging Polaris, that was the last time I had one. If I'm working a Cage Warriors, I always have one of these or one of the instant mix sachets with me. It just feels like it streamlines the way that my brain works a little bit. It's quite amazing. And the collagen, because, you know, everyone needs to recover. And at my age, starting training camp again, I'm needing buckets full of this. I might as well just bathe in this, to be honest, Jamie, just to see if I can heal myself quicker. You know, this one thing I've noticed, right? So I feel great during training. It takes me maybe 30% longer to warm up. But then once I get going, I'm like, oh yeah, shit. I'm like 22 again. Wah, wah, wah. Feel great. And then as soon as I stop, I have a good stretch to cool down because I'm trying to be sensible. And then if I sit down for 10 minutes, whether it's an hour after the training session or 5 hours after, the getting back up after, I'm like, oh no, I might need some assistance here. I need one of those motorized chairs that kind of pushes me up, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say, like after the Hatton training, how did you feel after that?
Not too bad, you know. My abs were sore from that circuit we did at the end. Like my abs and hip flexors. That was good. And the bar bag got me. Because I used to do that a lot, but I couldn't get a good purchase with the gloves that I've got. I don't know whether it's because of the way that they wrap. I'm going to take different gloves next time because I was watching it back and the other ones, because they had lace-ups, they were able to pull their wrists back and get a better grip on the bar. But I couldn't get a good rhythm on it because my gloves kept feeling like I kept thinking I was going to slip off and headbutt the fucking thing and knock myself out. It was good though. It was good though. It wasn't too bad. I mean, I already feel in much better condition now than I did last week when we did that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, only a few days has passed, but because I've had a few sessions like that where you get to that point where your lungs feel like they're at their limit, and then you just kind of squeeze a bit extra out of them, like you're making a bit more room for more oxygen. That's kind of how it feels in my head. I'm starting to feel that a lot more. Yeah, a lot more. It's all coming together. I'll start doing some sparring soon as well.
Yeah,
might do some more touch sparring tonight at the gym. But yeah, it's all coming together. It's all coming together. I'm actually surprised how good I feel. I was expecting to be more sore and more, you know, have more like little injuries and stuff that I was finding. But yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting to see how your body like adapts back to that as well, like after a long time. But I suppose if you keep in reasonably good shape anyway, it's not too much of a, you know, when you get back into the extremes of it.
I mean, I think I got more out of shape when I was competing than I have done since I've stopped. Like since I stopped, I've not drifted much more above sort of 205 pounds. That's been kind of my upper limit. But then I'm at my best when I'm below 195. That's when I kind of feel, and then down to 185 when I've just gotten rid of that additional 10 pounds of just kind of, you know, cake and chocolate. then I'm cruising at a really, really comfortable place. And that's where I want to be for the fight. I want to be at 185 at least 2 weeks before the fight.
Yeah.
I don't want to have to cut any weight. I want to walk on the scales on the weight and be absolutely hydrated and comfortable. Because you know, why not? Why not? There's no reason to take chunks out of myself trying to fight the scales. Plus Diego's, you know, he's going to come in on 185. I know he is because that's his comfortable fighting weight. So. I don't know how he did 155 a little while. Yeah. No, 165, wasn't it?
Oh, was that on Eagle?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It seems like a long way off from where he was at the press conference.
Yeah.
Anyway, where were we? So xbrain.co.uk, check them out. If you use the code OUTLAW, you'll get 20% off. And obviously, if you want any on it products or any proteins or any, the mushroom coffee is awesome as well. Get on this. All kinds of good products that you can grab for 20% off. And our other sponsor is us today, Jamie. We're at Full Reptile because we have a new drop this week. As you can see, I'm wearing this. That's the new Muay Thai design. Yeah, I've been looking forward to this coming out for a while. So we've got a couple of t-shirts. We've got this and we've got the brown one as well. I'll just quick show you the back print because obviously you can't see me sitting. It's very dark in this one, but that's kind of how I like it. It's, I love it. Old school design. Print. Old school design. Okay. And then we've got a hoodie and a sweatshirt as well, which you'll see in the coming days on the social media. So they'll be released at 4 p.m. on Sunday and you'll be able to grab them and grab them quick because things are starting to fly out before the day's over, which is cool. Okay. 274, Jamie, tell me a bit about it before we move on because I want to know your thoughts.
Yeah. Well, I caught up on it on Sunday and I went straight to the main event. Obviously,
yeah. Knowing the result already,
yeah. And it was exactly as I thought it would go. To be honest, I thought it'd strangle him in the first round.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a massive Charles Oliveira fan, anyway. So I was always backing him.
Yeah.
But yeah, he just proved again that he's just the best.
He's awesome. Were you concerned how much he got hit though? Because my thought is that, like. What he really wanted was a clean performance where he didn't really get touched. because then he's least like, I mean, maybe he did it on purpose, that'd be silly, but you know, maybe he would be least likely to fight Conor McGregor if he had not really been hit. The fact that he got hit a couple of times and looked hurt is going to give McGregor the confidence to be like, okay, I can crack him with that shot and hurt him. He can't keep doing that. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
he takes some big shots. That's my only concern. And he got cut as well, didn't he? It was a pretty bad cut. Yeah, but that finish was super slick.
Yeah. The thing is with him, like, because I know he did get hurt in the fight and he got hit and got knocked down. But I felt like he was never hurt enough to be able to offer any kind of offense. You know, like kind of that Glover Teixeira.
Yeah.
Where you go into that.
Autopilot.
Yeah, and he like hit the floor and it's like he was just kind of drawing Gaethje, and Gaethje obviously didn't go down there, but he's still got the ability to be in the fight.
He's still dangerous enough for Gaethje to chase him down there, I wondered even on the first shot whether he kind of sat down a little bit. He took a decent shot, but whether he kind of sat down to see if Gaethje would rush in. Like, I remember Fabricio Verdum doing it a couple of times. He did it to Mark Hunt. And Hunt hit him with an overhand right. But you could see he was moving away and it was kind of a glancing shot. And of course, Mark Hunt's hit enough people and hurt them to know when he lands a good shot or not. So he knew he'd not landed a clean shot. But Verdum went down and kind of made out that he did.
Yeah.
And Mark Hunt like chased in a minute and then he went, no, get back up. Because he knew he was kind of playing possum.
Yeah.
I did wonder for a minute whether he did that. But Gaethje, of course, didn't bite on it. But yeah, he's very, very good. Do you think... What okay? So if you're Islam Makhachev, how do you approach Charles Oliveira? Do you keep it standing or do you try and wrestle with him?
I was thinking about this earlier, and it's so hard because I think whatever Islam could offer him on the floor, he could find a way around it. I don't think, and like when it comes to the striking, I think Oliveira is much better. I can't really see. Yeah, it's so hard to figure out how Islam would approach it.
Yeah.
How do you think he would?
Well, again, I'm kind of playing around with it because, of course, like I think if Islam wants to wrestle and wants to control the fight, the clinch part of the fight, you know, whether the fight is on the ground or on the feet, I think he can do that. So then that gives him the choice as to whether he wants to strike, and because Oliveira is not really that interested in forcing a takedown most of the time, he will quite happily strike with Makhachev. And if he starts to win that exchange, then Makhachev might feel like he's forced to wrestle. And then he's going into a world where Oliveira is not going to try and defend that takedown unless he's going to chase a guillotine. You know, he'll buy himself a moment to get himself some space like he did against Clay Guida.
Yeah.
So I think there's a massive risk in Makhachev deciding he wants to wrestle. But if he stays on the feet and doesn't have as much success as he'd like, which is possible, then I could see him being forced to wrestle and getting subbed. It'd be interesting because obviously, you know, the thing is with Makhachev's wrestling is he is very good, but the finishing capability of his wrestling is jiu-jitsu, like the kimura that he got on Dan Hooker. You know, that's a jiu-jitsu finish. So even if he wins the wrestling exchange and he's able to control him, does he have enough jiu-jitsu to finish the fight there? He would have to ground and pound, which would mean he'd either have to do damage quickly or he'd be down there for a while defending submissions. And I don't know. I think at this point it might be a step too far for him.
Yeah, but then, I think that as well. Is that the tail end of
it? Who else in the rankings though?
Yeah. I can't really see anyone in the division beating Oliveira at the moment. I think the fight that makes sense to make is the Makhachev fight. Because I think he's probably got the best chance of doing it.
Yeah.
But I'd like to see Oliveira maybe go up as well.
Would you? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mentioned it on the aftermath, that frosty fist bump with Kamaru Usman.
Yeah.
Did you feel it? It was like,
yeah.
I bet Kamaru was wishing he put a shirt or at least a vest on at this point. Fuck. It was very frosty. And I mean, the thing is, of course, he'd just beaten his teammate. It was after the fight, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he'd just beaten his teammate. So there's a little bit of like, all right, motherfucker, I'm, you know. But I think that'd be a wicked fight.
Yeah, same.
I just, my thought is, if Kamaru hits him with that straight cross, it would decimate him in a way that the Justin Gaethje punches didn't. Like Kamaru Usman is like physically he's able to generate a lot more force, and his technique is a lot better than Justin Gaethje's. Like he's straight punching. Mm. If he cracks Oliveira on the chin with that, that's not a good day for Oliveira. That's where he loses the fight, I think, by going up to welterweight and getting hit by someone that's got heavy hands. Yeah. It's kind of the lightweight division is a bit of a weird spot, isn't it? Because there's a bunch of guys that are on their way through, but they're still not quite ready, you know? Like yeah. Gamrot and Sarukian and Fazeev and Gillespie, they're just not quite ready yet, I don't think. Like within one or two fights, especially if they're impressive, then yeah, for sure, they'll put themselves in a position. But at the moment, it's kind of a bit like old boys at the top and new boys at the bottom.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And Makhachev's the only one that's kind of blurring the lines.
Where is Makhachev?
Makhachev's at four at the moment. Four. But then the whole rankings have been made a mess of because Charles Oliveira is at number one instead of the champion.
Of course,
so everyone's moved down. So I can't remember. Oh, is it Diego Ferreira right at the bottom? He was number 15. He's bounced out the top 15. Oh. That must be fucking annoying.
Oh, that's harsh.
Yeah, isn't it? Yeah, Oliveira at number one, Poirier number two, Gaethje number three, Makhachev four, Chandler five, Dariush six, RDA seven, Gillespie eight, McGregor nine, Tony Ferguson at 10, Fazeev 11, Sarukian 12, Hooker at 13, Gamrot 14, Riddell at 15, and then Ferreira teetering on the outside, ready to drop back in when the champion gets his belt back. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Islam Oliveira fight is probably going to be the one for the title, right? Or would you think?
I think so, unless they pull some shit with McGregor, like parachuting him from the lighting rig or something. I could just quite easily see that happening. Like the fact that Oliveira mentioned him in his post fight interview, and the fact that McGregor was on Twitter at the same time making a noise. Like I could quite easily see him rolling that fight in, especially if they're not going to make McGregor against Diaz. Which, yeah. You know, they're both now calling for, but I still think they're going to try and execute Nate with Chimaev. That's me like an assassination, that is.
The thing is, Chandler called out McGregor as well.
Yeah, that's a good fight.
I'd like to see that fight.
Yeah, that's a good fight. That's a really interesting fight, especially because Chandler can fight out of both stances mm-hmm. as well, which would be interesting for McGregor to deal with. I'd like to watch it. I mean, but what do you do with Tony Ferguson now? I mean, he's still in the top 10. But he's on a losing streak and you don't really want to throw him in there against... I mean, I think I mentioned it on the aftermath. Brad Riddell would be a good one.
Yeah.
Because they're both a bit battle-worn and a bit wild, aren't they?
But you know how you were saying that, obviously because of what he was saying in his media day interviews and stuff, that I reckon he's going to get put into that position now where he's going to be testing all the up-and-coming guys?
Yeah.
Like, who's below him? Fazeev, Sarukian, like those kind of guys.
Yeah. Oh, Fazeev would be lethal.
Yeah.
Sarukian, I think, would just wrestle him, and that would be a decision where he'd probably get beaten up and frustrated for 15 minutes. You know, Gillespie would do the same to him. I think they're all rough nights, all the guys around him. Gamrot's an interesting one because he's got striking and jiu-jitsu. He is a good grappler as well, though, and I just think he's a better all-round mixed martial artist than Tony, especially at this point in Tony's career. But, you know, I mean, you could make Tony against Dan Hooker.
Yeah, a lot of people were suggesting that on the aftermath.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, who would you want Tony to fight next? And Dan Hooker came up quite a lot.
Yeah.
I think that would be a really entertaining fight.
It'd be an obvious one as well, wouldn't it? Because of Dan Hooker coming back up from featherweight, said it was too much of a push for him. It looked like two scarecrows fighting one another. Yeah. Two scarecrows with a lot of scar tissue. Scar crows, there we go. Fucking throw down of the scar crows. Okay, what else on 274 stood out? What did you think to the Rose Esparza fight? Did you watch it or did you just bypass it entirely?
I watched the highlights of it.
Did you? Were there? Were there highlights?
Yeah, I struggled to find them. But it was just a bit, it just wasn't very entertaining, was it, as a fight? But I guess, I do think probably Carla did win.
Yeah.
Yeah. Only because she just seemed to be a little bit more busier, I guess.
Yeah.
But that's all I could put it down to. Other than, yeah.
Well, it gives it gives Joanna a lot of confidence because she beat the shit out of Carla Esparza. I bet she's been having nightmares about that fight ever since, getting her face elbowed into the canvas. Like, she's already started talking about she's coming back and she's going to get the belt. So it's interesting. I mean, you know, like Rose, she just took no chances, which is probably the smart thing to do. But like in an octagon that size with two strawweights, like they can stay away from each other for a long time. It would have been so much more difficult for two heavyweights to do that. Although Ngannou and Derek Lewis managed to, didn't they? Like, it's just sometimes people just don't want to engage for a variety of different reasons. And, you know, Rose didn't want to take any risks and overstep and get taken down or get hit with unnecessary shots. That makes sense. Esparza didn't really, I mean, she wasn't able to control the distance enough to do anything of significance. You know, it was more that Rose didn't want to open up that made Esparza's job very difficult. But then Esparza didn't fight like she was trying to take the belt off her, for me.
Yeah.
It's a really awkward one. When it's so tight, I mean, four shots each in the first round. Like, you know, like what weight do you give to each shot? And, you know, it's difficult to judge.
I mean, in a fight like that, really, you'd probably think it could be called a draw. And then the champion just retains the belt because the opposition didn't win the belt. You know, do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, didn't put enough in to win the belt, I guess. But
yeah,
it's hard.
I mean, you know, at that point, you could even go, fuck it, let's go round six. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Penalty shootout.
Yeah.
We could just do a slap fight. Just bring a podium into the center of the cage and they just slap fight it out until someone wins.
That would be interesting, though, if you did that, I think.
They used to do it in K1, in the Grand Prix, because you needed a winner. So if it went the distance, like, at the end of the fight, because it was interesting, you know, obviously sometimes one fighter was really confident that they'd won two rounds, because it was only three threes. You know, one fighter would be really confident that they'd won two of the rounds, and the other one would be kind of unsure. So they go back to their corner and sit down and get water and grease, and the other one stand there celebrating. And then next thing, the referee goes, find a sudden death round. And they're like, oh, fucking, here we go again. And sometimes they've both been so exhausted, and then it's drawn a fourth round, and one of them just puts their foot on the gas and just does enough.
Yeah.
Like, Rose did that in the fifth, I thought.
Yeah.
You know, she scored a takedown in the fifth, but then if you go, okay, it was indecisive, you know, you could put the scorecards public at that point and then go, you know, final round.
Yeah.
You know?
What was that? Was it that Wakao fight that you
sent me? Masato.
Yeah, yeah.
What a fight that was.
That went to an extra round, didn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And you could see, and you could see Masato was like, oh, fuck. Yeah. Like, he's been such a handful at this point. Great fight. Both of them were great fights. What about Royval's guillotine match now? Super slick.
Yeah, wicked.
I know you're a Royval fan.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. There were some good performances. Fiallo looked really good against Van Camp as well.
There was. I thought Tracy Cortez looked good against Gatto.
Yep. Yeah. Some good ones all the way up the card. I was disappointed for Danny Roberts. He just seems to struggle to put his foot in the gas sometimes when he needs to. And Trinaldo's like, he's just a nightmare, isn't he?
Yeah, I think if it goes over the distance because of the experience of Trinaldo, just kind of takes over, I guess.
And nothing seems to really hurt him. Like, he just seems unfazed by everything. It must be like kicking a tree. Yeah. And Godinez looked really good as well. Just completely drowned Carnelosi. She's an interesting one for the strawweight division. Like, I could see Godinez against Esparza in the near future. I know. Obviously, she's a little bit of a way out. She's probably not even in the rankings yet, right? But she's definitely got the potential to be up there. Skills to compete, for sure. No, she's not. Strawweight's filling out, isn't it? I think she's one to watch, though, for sure, Godinez. But with that wrestling ability, she's going to be able to at least control the majority of the fighters above her.
She is really fast paced as well, isn't it? Like, really high output.
Yeah, and then you look at the card this week, there's a couple of fights on this card. Jan DeRoba against Angela Hill. I could quite easily see her fighting one of those two in the future, and that would put her in the rankings. Okay, shall we move on?
Yeah,
Shall we start having a look at this card coming up? So, we'll have a quick look through the prelims. Where are we? We've got our shit together today, Jamie. So, prelims. So the first one on the card is Maximov against Petrosky. It's a bit of a battle of the back takers, this one is. Yeah. Both of them, you know, both of them kind of want to do the same thing. So like Petrosky looks like he would be incredibly fucking strong and powerful, at least for the opening. But Maximov has got that kind of grinding, kind of slow you down and hang on you, like he did against Soriano. Constantly on his back, constantly threatening with stuff. If he's in half guard, he's able to just control and chip away. I could see Petrosky getting exhausted here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Especially because he's heavy on his lead leg and Maximov's striking is predominantly kicking. Like, he's all high kicks and low kicks and level changes to takedowns, isn't he?
I saw this one as a little bit, because they're both like, Petrosky's like strong, like wrestler, and Maximov's like really good grappler, like them just kind of swinging it out a little bit as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do like Maximov. He's out of Nick Diaz's gym as well, you know.
My only criticism of him is he just doesn't look particularly ferocious. Like, he doesn't like, he doesn't seem to be like enjoying it. It's just like, this is what I do. I've got these skills. This is how I put them to use.
Yeah.
And he just kind of does what he needs to do. Whereas Petrosky, he seems like he really is determined to try and finish everybody he fights. Like, you know, like big takedowns, like, you know, I mean, you know, gift wrapping his opponents and smashing them with elbows. Like, he's really trying to hurt people. And I felt like he's got that edge, and that might last for about 6 minutes. But if he's not able to dominate and hurt Maximov, he's going to start to wear. And then Maximov's going to start to reverse the grappling game, take his back. I mean, Petrosky might not even be able to take Maximov down. It might be Maximov trying to grapple and climb up his back. I could just see Maximov winning a decision here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just grinding him out.
I could see, I mean, I saw it like Maximov just tiring out Petrosky.
Yeah.
And maybe getting a submission even.
Yeah. A bit later on.
Yeah.
A bit later on. Has Petrosky been subbed before? 7-1. So he's only got one loss on his record. And it was, got on Tapology, be quick. It was a ninja choke. He's been stopped professionally. He was stopped knees to ground and pound. So, I mean, potentially you could get tied up and exhausted. And I just think Maximov's going to be constantly trying to chase to his back. And if he gets exhausted defending that, he might find himself in half guard bottom just getting beaten up. I could easily see that. He was subbed on the Ultimate Fighter 28. That was the submission that I was talking about. A ninja choke.
Ah, right, okay.
Yeah.
Brian Battle.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll just rattle through quick picks here, but I reckon Maximov, don't you?
Yeah, I say Maximov, yeah.
Okay, well, as we move on to the next one's Tyra, isn't it? The Japanese kid. So we've got Carlos Candelario taking on Tatsuro Tyra, and I've got a little clip of this kid because I was enjoying watching him yesterday. So he's tall, he's rangy, he's a little bit awkward, but he's very confident with his kicking game, and he's quite happy to walk people down, and then his sub game is pretty impressive. And he's fighting Candelario, who's a wrestler, southpaw wrestler, who's going to constantly want to be shooting. Now, southpaw the orthodox, which, as you can see Tyra is, opens up his kicking game for him. So, like, if you're picking an opponent for this kid to stay undefeated 11-0, you want a southpaw that wants to wrestle. That's exactly what he's got.
Yeah.
That's good matchmaking. That's clever matchmaking. So he just walks people down. I mean, this kid he was fighting here had decent striking, constant in and out movement, was a little bit flustering for him, but he just kept chopping at his lead leg. And then the knockdown that he does, he goes high kick to right hand, same side. Yeah, watch this. High kick, right hand. And you see the kid rocked, and then he comes in, he cracks him just over the back of the head with one other shot. It just kind of catches him weird, like right on the side, on the top side of the head. Perfectly legal shot. And then his legs go. And then he's straight away, as he drops, he circles and takes his back. Yeah, let me just play it all in slow-mo. I've got a replay as well. I love the kick to punch on the same side. Bang.
Yeah.
It's quite a difficult thing to do, especially to generate some power into it. But it's really good to, like, Sitachai does it from Southpaw a lot.
Yeah, wasn't that Enrico Kell doing it? But he does it before he lands, doesn't he?
Yeah, like, he does. Punch to kick and then kick to... Yeah, yeah, he's very good at Enrico Kell. And he was on this Rear Naked Choke straight away. I think I watched this slow-mo. Blocks the high kick and then shoots straight into that little channel there on the side of his chin. Bang. And then one more right across the side of the head. Just a glancing shot that is, but it's enough to fold his head into the side of his shoulder. And then as he drops, even though he gets that hook on the inside of the leg, you know, kind of like what Gaethje did against Oliveira, hooks on the inside of the leg. He goes straight under the neck. And that choke's already started there before he even gets his hands together. That's already uncomfortable. You can see him going for the wrist. And he's clamped on the back of the head and then just leaps over and pulls his opponent with him. Pulls his hook in at the same time. Really nice.
Yeah, that's nice.
It was a cool little finish, that was. There we go, one more. Bang. Straight under the neck. I like that aggression. Like Jan Błachowicz, obviously on this card, he's really good at that. Just like biting the neck straight away and then thinking about hooks after if he needs them. So as you probably guessed, I'm picking Tatsuro in this one.
Yeah.
I mean, he just looks very slick. Unless Candelario can just drown him on the floor. He got hit a lot in his contender series fight, didn't he?
I think as well, like Tatsuro, he's undefeated even in amateurs as well. He's had a lot of experience.
Yeah, what did you say it was? Was it 19?
I think he's got 19, undefeated in 19.
Yeah. And Candelario's coming off his first loss. Yeah. I mean, it was a split decision, but he did take some shots in that fight. Yeah. He was quite hittable.
Yeah, I think like you said, he's kind of been set up for Tatsuro to... make a good impression on his first fight.
Yeah. Yeah, that's my pick anyway. Quite clear that one for me. Okay, next one up is... this is a good one. Xander Roba against Angela Hill. Hang on a minute, I could do Taylor the Tape on this one. So this is a bit striker grappler to me. I think if Angela Hill's able to keep this one on the feet and kind of pick her off and make her work for everything, every grappling exchange, I think she can win. I think if it hits the floor, it's game over for her. Xander Roba's ground game is too much for Angela Hill, I think. So 17-3 for Xander Roba, 13-11 for Angela Hill. Both 5-3, both with a 64-inch reach, so that everything's square there. Higher striking output for Angela Hill. Better striking defense and striking accuracy for Angela Hill. So again, you know, it really suits her if it stays on the feet. 2.14 takedown average for Xander Roba and a 78% takedown defense for Angela Hill. 1.4 submission average per 15 minutes. I really think it is quite clear cut on this one. If it stays on the feet, if Angela Hill's able to stuff her takedowns, she can win this fight by outpacing her and outpointing her. But if it hits the floor, Xander Roba's most likely going to sub her. Most likely rear naked choke, because that's Angela's kryptonite, unfortunately.
Yeah, I do think if Angela can damage her early on, though, in the fight, like with elbows and stuff.
Yeah, like she did against Karna Losi, she smashed her with those elbows.
Yeah, so if she can do that in the early rounds, maybe she might be able to get the fight finished before it gets to the point of her being taken down and drowned.
Yeah.
But
these are both in the rankings, aren't they? Angela Hill at 13 and Ferner is right above her at 12. So they could literally just switch places here. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it would be a good fight.
Yeah, I do. I expect Angela Hill to be competitive, but I think Ferner eventually will be able to get her to the floor and sub her.
I'm going to go for Angela.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, we'll split on that one. Michael Johnson against Alan Patrick. So, quick tale of the tape. Michael Johnson, 20-17, compared to Alan Patrick, who's 15-3 with one no contest. 1-inch height advantage for Alan Patrick, as well as 1-inch reach advantage. Both southpaw. Strikes landed per minute is considerably on Michael Johnson's side, 4.21. Good takedown defense as well at 77%. He's just struggles, or at least recently is really struggling to put wins together. And the thing that's frustrating about Michael Johnson is he's had really, really competitive fights with really good fighters. And he's like, he's either been winning and let it slip away, kind of like the Nate Diaz fight, or he's just, you know, he's just hung in there for long enough to prove that he's worthy of that stage, but not quite had enough to, you know.
Yeah, his record was 19 and 17.
Yeah. It's in,
like, but I was looking at it and like he's got a win over like Tony Ferguson, Joe Lauzon, Barboza, Poirier.
Yeah.
Like he's
stopped Poirier in 90 seconds.
Yeah. Like he's
stopped Gleison Tibau. Yeah, he's got good wins on his record, hasn't he?
Yeah. But yeah, I can see him beating Patrick in this one though.
Yeah.
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 I think like you said, this Patrick's not really, he's been struggling of late. And they both kind of need a win, but I just think Michael Johnson's got like that experience advantage on him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Alan Patrick's got that kind of game. It's a bit like Michel Pereira. He's very kind of elastic and springy. He's doing backflips and stuff on stage when he's weighing in. Like, and now he's 38, and I think that will start to like kind of drop off a bit. And I think, like you said, Michael Johnson's experience is going to shine through here. He's just, I just think he's a very good level of gatekeeper.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And you know, in another time with another training camp and a different kind of approach, or maybe a different situation, I don't know. You know, you don't know what's affecting these fighters as they're preparing. But he could have quite easily been a world title contender, quite easily have been, you know, like a legit contender. Like people are like excited for him to fight for the belt. He just didn't quite make it, but good fighter, really good.
I think he enjoys competing as well.
Yeah.
Like he's one of those guys that enjoys doing being part of the sport and being an athlete.
And there's something quite liberating about having 17 losses on your record. It's like, whatever. Let's go again. I think he's going to win this one. Are you taking Michael Johnson as well?
Yeah.
I think he might decision him. And the last one, Vivian Araujo against Andrea Lee. Bit of a kickboxing match, do you think?
Yeah, yeah. I think Andrea Lee's looked really good recently.
Mm-hmm.
I think she might be a little bit more physical.
Yeah, her judo against Antonina Shevchenko was good, wasn't it? She kept catching that head and arm. Was it spinning back fist to head and arm throw she landed in that fight? Super slick. Her judo really stood out in that one. Araujo looks physically very strong. I'm not sure. What are you saying?
Yeah, I've got Andrea Lee.
Have you? Yeah.
Yeah,
I think she's
going
to outpoint her, outstrike her.
Yeah, I think so. I think she's like one of them people who are like unsurprisingly strong as well.
Mm. Yeah, wiry strong.
Yeah. So I think she might have a little bit more advantage in like the physicality of the fight, and I think she might just pick her off over the distance as well.
I was very impressed with her against Shevchenko, the way that she was just flowing into those judo throws and stuff. I feel like at any point when this comes together, if she decides she wants to put it on the floor, even if it's just for a scramble, she's most likely going to be able to. I'm thinking Andrea Lee as well, to be honest. Should be a good scrap on that one as well, though. Okay, so that is the prelims done. We agreed on every one of them apart from Jandaroba, Angela Hill, in which you were wrong. but we'll see. Okay, all right. We will do the first fight on the main card. So I am very excited for this one, although this is a really tough, like proper UFC debut for Jake Hadley. It really is.
Yeah.
Especially with him being a grappler. And now he's coming up against Nascimento, who was constant off his back in his last fight. Like quick fire submission attacks.
Yeah, I think I like Hadley. Like it's really good, like watching him through Cage Warriors and in the Contender Series as well. He looked really good. But like you said, I think Nascimento, he's got a massive experience advantage on him. And I feel like they are similar kind of fighters, but I do think Nascimento's boxing's a little bit cleaner.
Yeah.
Whereas Hadley can kind of get in, but he's like hands are low, like hangs his hands a bit lower, and he's a little bit like looping with his shots.
Yeah. high pressure as well. Yeah, so he puts himself into striking range.
Yeah. It's a tough one, but I'm a big fan of Hadley, and I was going to back him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's because you're a big fan of him.
Yeah.
Not necessarily because he's
not necessarily he's going to win that.
I think this is a rough one. You know, watching what Nascimento did against Alam Bekov, I think to myself, okay, if it hits the floor, I don't know. It's hard to say whether Jake Hadley's got the grappling level to be able to compete. The fact that he's got rubber guard might bring something new to the table that Nascimento would have to deal with, but I just felt like the chain attacks from Nascimento showed how good his grappling is against Ulan Bekov, who's obviously a good wrestler. I think I would like to see Jake win, of course, but I think this might be a step too far for him right at this point in his career. Ninth fight as a pro, fighting someone who's having their, you know, what is it, 27th fight?
25th.
Yeah. My maths is terrible. Yeah. I just think it might be a bit much for him.
Yeah, he's because Nascimento's fight against Ulan Bekov as well, he got out a few submission attempts as well, didn't he?
Yeah.
And I think, like you said, if Hadley's ground game isn't up to scratches like someone like Ulan Bekov, then he might be able to pick him off. But I'm still going to back Hadley.
Of course you are.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going with Nascimento for this one for sure. Although I'll be keeping my fingers crossed for Hadley, as I always do with the Cage Warriors guys. Okay, so Frank Camacho's been out for a while, hasn't he? It's been a couple of years since he's competed. So we've got Frank Camacho against Manuel Torres. 22-9 for Frank Camacho, 12-2 for Torres. Both 5'10", both 73-inch reach. Although I feel like Torres is really tall.
Yeah, I was surprised when I was typing up these stats, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because I thought Camacho looked much shorter than him, and he's like a bit more like stocky, but they've got exactly the same reach and they're the same height.
Yeah. I don't know whether that's because we've seen Camacho at welterweight, though. Do you know what I mean? Like I think, did he make his debut as a welterweight? I think he did. Yeah, he did. He fought the Leech. So, I don't know. I don't know whether I've got an unrealistic perspective of the size of Frank Camacho. Maybe he's bigger than I remember, but I felt like Torres was just massive in his last fight.
Yeah,
I felt like this is going to be a real struggle for Camacho to get close to him, especially with like how clean his straight punches were and how quick he was.
Yeah, his jab was really good in his contender fight.
Yeah,
his boxing was so clean, like his striking was. And like you said, I felt like Camacho would probably struggle to get close to him to land like his power shots.
And the other thing you have to remember as well is with him being out for so long, like his timing's probably not going to be right. It's very like, and timing's very different in MMA because like you can train and you can spar and you can hit pads and stuff, but then in the fight, everyone just feels like they're about 6 inches further away. So to cover that distance, especially if they don't want to cover that distance for you, it's very, very difficult. And you know, he's coming off two losses. He got choked by Dariush in the first round, then Justin Jane stopped him. So he's been out for, what, 23 months or so, coming off two losses. He's coming in against a guy that's been competing recently that's looked lethal. I don't know. I'm kind of in a similar situation with you and Jake Hadley. I'd like to pick Frank, but I don't think I can in this one. I think this is going to be a rough one for him. You know, fighting a young kid who's 3-fight win streak, you know, although he's not fought since October last year. I wonder why these fighters are taking so long out.
I'm with you, to be fair. I thought Torres just looked... I just think Frank's going to struggle to...
Just struggle to get around his
jab. Get close to him, get past that jab. And I think even if Frank decides to level change and go for a takedown... Like Torres has got guillotines on his record. He might just be able to catch him in something like that even.
Especially if he's clipped him a couple of times and hurt him. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, what we're saying. So, I mean, the stats are all out. The problem is with the stats in this one, because Torres has only had one fight in the contenders. All his stats are out. It's Frank's birthday is the day after mine. he's got a really high striking rate, Frank Camacho has, just generally, because he's had a few fights. It's a decent stat. It's 6.67. But then compared to the one fight that Torres has had, his striking stat is 11.5. That's a lot of strikes per minute. Good striking accuracy as well. And good striking defense. I think this is a rough one for Frank, especially being out for so long. Yeah, I can't.
I'm going to go for Torres as well.
Yeah. Okay. So next up we have Caitlin Chookagian against Amanda Hibas. So 17-4 for Chookagian, 11-2 for Hibas. 5'9", big height advantage for Chookagian, 2-inch reach advantage as well. More stopping power definitely on the side of Hibas, more experience on the side of Chookagian. She's been fighting at a high level. She's done 5-round fights. Chookagian for me is she always impresses me, the way that she patiently approaches the fight in a very smart, very calculated way. She doesn't tend to get drawn in too much. And of course she's good on the ground as well. I could see her making this a very difficult fight for Hibas to look good. I think Chookagian could just outpoint her.
Yeah, funnily enough, I thought this was like the similar to the previous fight, the Frank Camacho, the Torres one.
Yeah.
But like I feel like Ribas is gonna struggle to close that range and be able to get close to her. And Caitlin's always been really good at just kind of cruising to a decision.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, just picking her off over the distance.
Good footwork, moves laterally, picks and pokes and moves. And
the only thing I thought, because obviously what happened in the Andrade fight with Caitlin.
Yeah.
If Ribas starts to attack her body and maybe break her down that way, there might be a way for her to win.
I think Hibas needs to put her foot on the gas in this one. I think she needs to be aggressive, because the two times that Caitlin's been stopped have both been by TKO. And I think with a bit of aggression, she's going to be able to push her back and at least do enough damage. Like, imagine if she hurts her and drops her in one of the rounds. That's a 10-8 round potentially on the scorecards. And then that really makes Chookagian's work uphill, which means that she's going to have to come to her for the second and third. I would push the pace in this one if I was Hibas. I'd try and hit Chookagian as much and as hard as I could in the first round and like try and do some damage, but not get tangled up with her. Like keep at a distance, keep her at arm's length, but make sure that every time she hits you, you hit her harder. You know, funnily enough, it was the interview that Justin James did after the Camacho fight stuck in my mind, because he took the fight on, I think it was like 2 or 3 days notice or something. And he said, my plan was, I just need to hit him harder than he hits me. And I think that's the case here, right?
Yeah.
Because Chookagian's not, she's not stopping people. In 17 wins, she's got 2 TKOs and 1 submission. She's consistent with her skills everywhere, but she's got 14 decisions. If I'm Hibas, I'm trying to be as aggressive as possible in that opening round.
Yeah, because I don't think she doesn't really need to be concerned too much about like knockout power, so she can take chances in closing that distance, closing her down, and putting the pressure on.
Yeah, I mean the thing is, she has struggled with someone with a height advantage in Marina Rodriguez, hasn't she? You know, that was a rough one. She struggled to. Struggle to get close to her and then struggle to get away from her. I don't know. I mean, Chookagian can do that. She's got the striking and the footwork. And I think that if Hibas doesn't start fast and do damage in the first round, I think she'll lose a decision. I think she'll just get kind of outpointed. And like Chookagian's in that area where she's right under the championship level. Like I don't see her ever beating Shevchenko.
No.
You know what I mean? But she probably beats everybody else in the division.
Yeah.
Bit of an awkward position to be in. She could just do with a little bit more stopping power, just to have the ability to hurt her opponents a bit more. I think that would change her odds considerably, but she just doesn't have that. And I mean, to be honest, Shevchenko, you know, she's stopping people after hitting them multiple times and holding them down and hitting them. Like, yeah, I think Chookagian wins this one. I think she wins by decision.
Yeah, I got Amanda Ribas.
Have you? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just think if...
So how does it go then for her?
I think her best way to win is similar to how I know Andrade has got a lot more power, but I feel like if she can just kind of not be to just really apply pressure and close it down and just stop that and just wear on her,
yeah,
like over the distance, try and
body shots,
body shots, like body kicks, just really wear on her. And break it down that way.
It wouldn't surprise me if she started to do that, if Chikagian started to try and take her down. And then it should be an interesting battle. I still think Chikagian probably has the advantage on the floor though. But yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm interested for this one. It should affect the rankings as well, shouldn't it? Where are we? So Chikagian's at number one and where's Ahibas?
Is she...
Hang on a minute, what's going on here? Is she moving up a weight class? Hebus is ranked at number 9 at strawweight, so she's moving up to flyweight. Is that the first time she's fought at flyweight then?
I'm not sure. Did she miss weight? I remember. Maybe not.
It's the first time I've noticed this.
She fought Marina at...
So is she not in the rankings yet? Her last one was against Chandarobi, and it was at strawweight. So did she miss weight for that one then?
I wonder
why she's moved up then.
She was set to fight Michelle Watson, which was cancelled in March.
I wonder why she's moving up then. That gives me even less confidence.
One was at strawweight as well.
Yeah.
Oh no, sorry, that one was at flyweight. The Michelle Watson.
Well, if she wins here, she's going to be ranked. This is a big jump into the top of the division, then, isn't it?
Can I change my pick?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, the thing is, like you said, she's, you know, if she's moving up a weight class, she might be able to add a bit more power and stuff to her shots. She might be able to mimic what Andrade does, what Andrade did to her.
Yeah, maybe so, yeah. Maybe now she's not, you know, cutting so much. Yes, she might be able to hold her power a little bit more.
Yeah.
So yeah, that makes my pick all right.
You're sticking with it. Okay, fair enough. Okay, this next one is an absolute banger because it's Davy Grant against Lewis Smolka.
Oh yeah.
So Smolka's been around the UFC for a long while. He's a very, very talented fighter. He's had personal problems, you know, with addiction that have they've affected his professional progress. He could have been much higher up in the rankings and consistently in the rankings. But this second wave of him, you can kind of see he's matured a bit. Like Davy Grant, in my opinion, has got really, really effective striking for mixed martial arts. Stance switching, very kind of modern, the way that he approaches things. Like that switch that he caught Martinez with. Like those kind of things are going to give Smolka problems. The reason I like Smolka is because even if Davy Grant's stepping through, he'll cover and then start countering with power hooks because he's overly aggressive. But I could see this one being the one that steals the show, to be honest.
Yeah, this was my potential fight of the night as well.
Yeah.
I just think because Davy Grant's really fun to watch. I like watching Davy Grant. His fight against Marlon was wicked.
Awesome.
Yeah. And like you said, Smolka isn't afraid to throw back as well. He's got an aggressive style. So I can really see, like, Smolka holding his ground and Davy Grant just kind of bouncing back in and out.
Yeah.
And
my concern for Davy Grant is grappling. Like, he really should do with staying away from Smolka's grappling just because, you know, he's not going to win the fight there, in my opinion. Davy Grant needs to stay on the outside, use that hop sidekick to the midsection because Smolka does kind of march a little bit quite square. Davy Grant could keep using that sidekick to the midsection from southpaw and keep switching his stance as he's stepping in and then moving away again. Every time he moves towards Smolka, though, you're guaranteed he's going to start trading, and there might be catches and trips and takedowns and stuff from Smolka as well. And I think Smolka's games, his grappling game has always been underestimated. I mean, I think, was it Paddy Houlihan he beat? Yeah, it was, Rear Naked Choke. So that was... that was the second Dublin show that the UFC did. It was the one after McGregor fought Brandao.
Oh, right.
And it was supposed to be... It was supposed to be Poirier against... Why am I forgetting his name? Irish fighter, doesn't compete Quilly. Anymore. No, doesn't compete anymore. Oh, Joe Duffy. Oh. That was supposed to be the main event. They ended up, I think Joe Duffy pulled out first and then he was replaced and then Poirier pulled out. And anyway, it ended up, the whole card got reshuffled and it ended up being Smolka against Paddy Houlihan, the main event, and Smolka choked him out. And it was kind of, you went from like McGregor Brandau and he bam, 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 Brandau's out, the whole fucking place goes off, to then Paddy getting choked. And it was like kind of sad, you know what I mean? Yeah. But you could see it happening because Smolka is so good on the ground. Like, this is a really interesting fight until it hits the ground, and then I think Smolka is going to be able to work David Grant over.
Yeah, I'm back in Davey because I think he, just purely because of his output as well.
Yeah,
I think if he can, and I don't think his conditioning's, I mean the fights I've watched him in, he doesn't really ever seem to drop off.
No.
Yeah, like you said, the only concern really is if he gets taken down and drowned a little bit. But I think if he can avoid the takedown and just maintain his pace that he usually fights at, he could probably get a decision win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So 17-8 for Smolka, 13-6 for Davey Grant. So they've both got a few losses on their record. So it's, you know what I mean? You can tell that they've been on both sides of the coin, and that does help, I think, in their approach. It makes them both a bit more mature and certain of the way that they approach it. I think Davey's going to be smart enough to not want to grapple too much with Smolka. 1-inch height advantage for Smolka, 1-inch reach advantage for Davey Grant. 8 knockouts and 7 submissions for Smolka. 3 knockouts and 8 submissions for Davey Grant. But again, I just think that the level of Smolka's grappling is going to be problematic for Davey Grant. He is very, very slick on the ground. As far as their strike landed per minute, they're almost identical. 4.55, 4.54. Davey Grant has slightly better striking defense, 60% takedown defense, but of course a much higher submission average for Smolka. Yeah, I mean, I could see Davey Grant dancing around him, beating him up, picking him off, nailing him with that side kick over and over again, and just kind of being the more elusive, better footwork, more lively fighter. But I can see him come crashing in, getting into a trade with Smolka and getting tripped takedown. And then he's dealing with Smolka climbing up and trying to take his back. Let's have a look at submissions for... When was Davey Grant's last submission?
You see, guillotine. Oh no! Sorry, rear naked choke, was it?
Yeah, it was a rear naked choke on the Ultimate Fighter. So then, if you look at his record, he's actually been subbed 3 times since then. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's my concern. Like Bermudez, Stasiak, and Holdsworth. I could see Davey Grant getting subbed here.
Do you think if Grant kind of draws Smolka, if he stuffs a few takedowns and draws him into the fight, that I could see that happening, and
absolutely getting him. Yeah, I mean, 60% takedown defense, he's stopping more than half takedown attempts, and Smolka's takedown accuracy is 37%. It's not great, but Davey Grant's got to stay disciplined. If he hits Smolka a few times and feels like he's hurting him, he might chase the finish and get overexcited. And Smolka's able to take a lot of shots. He's very, very durable. My concern is that Davey's just going to get tangled up. I'm going to pick Davey to win. I think he's going to be able to outpoint him and beat him by decision. But there is a real risk of getting tangled up with Smolka, and I think he needs to avoid that best he can.
Yeah, I've got Grant as well, Davey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Co-main event time, right? Light heavyweights. Ryan Spann, Iwan Kutalaba. Yeah. Now this is an interesting one, because Kutalaba is one of the gamest fighters that you'll find on the UFC roster. Like, he's trying to fight at the face-off, at the weigh-in. Like, he's a maniac. But I've always felt like he's kind of a bit undersized for light heavyweight. Like, 6'1", 75-inch reach. I could quite easily see him as a middleweight. And then when you saw Ryan Spann against Anthony Smith, I know he lost that fight, but he looked massive.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether Kutalaba is going to be able to bully Ryan Spann like he has been, or like he does other people, or at least like he tries to.
It's funny, because I thought the Spann Smith fight, I thought Smith looked like the bigger guy, and then I was like, but Spann's 6'5".
Yeah,
like, I mean, both huge guys.
Anthony Smith is a big dude. He's 6'4".
Mm. But his back and he just looked huge in that fight.
And he's got, and Spann's got that kind of like kind of stalking style where like he just doesn't seem like he's fazed by anything at all. I could see him just being able to outlast Kutalaba's enthusiasm. He's going to keep having these bursts where he gets a bit wild, and Spann's going to be able to cover and cover. I think he's going to be able to stuff his takedowns. And I think if he's able to start flustering Kutalaba against the fence, he'll get that level change. And then Spann's got that really nice guillotine that you use. I mean, long arms, he's got a 4-inch reach advantage. He gets underneath and then he like cup and saucers his hand and drives his forearm into the side of their neck. I could easily see Ryan Spann winning this one by guillotine in the first.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see it playing out quite easily in that way.
I thought he might even win by knockout as well. Thought they might, because he's got good, like, clean boxing as well, Spann.
Yep.
I can see Kutalaba just crashing in.
Yeah.
Like, looping shots, like, really recklessly, and Spann just catches him.
Yeah.
Coming in.
Yeah, he caught Serkinov clean a couple of times before he was that finished on the floor. And the Nogueira one. That was a nice finish as well. Yeah, I think this is Ryan Spann's fight to lose, to be honest. I mean, you know, as far as his like height and reach, you know, he's got 4-inch height and a 4-inch reach advantage. He's got 11 wins by sub, and he's able to find that guillotine quite consistently. And Kutalaba's got, 12 stoppages on his record out of 16 fights, but then he does put himself at harm's way quite a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think Kutalaba, I've always kind of felt like he's the Mershaw. He kind of hits the top of the division and is like, not quite. Like he did with Ankalaev.
Yeah, yeah.
Like he might have been able to get him in that fight had his game not been rumbled by the referee and him playing possum a little bit. But I just think he either starts really, really fast and he's overly aggressive and he overwhelms people like we've seen him do several times, or it just doesn't work, and then all of a sudden he's dealing with this 6'5" monster that's walking him down and just punching his face off, and then he level changes into a guillotine. I fully expect Ryan Spann to guillotine him here.
Yeah, I think, I definitely see Ryan Spann for the win. I think he's a lot more like calculated as well.
Yeah.
Like, and Kutalaba's a bit of a loose cannon.
The biggest question is, will he paint himself green for the weigh-in or not? That must take him fucking ages. Yeah, no, honestly. I was thinking that. It must take him ages. I did it to myself once. I painted myself like a dark blue color, and I went all the way. Like I went all inside my ears and everything. It took ages to fucking wash it all off. Ages. It was ridiculous.
I was thinking you get like one arm done, then you're like you still got 95% of your body to go.
You're like, I'll just leave it as one arm. I'm just having a quick look at the stats of these two guys. So Kutalaba's got a higher strikes landed per minute, a lower striking accuracy, higher takedown average. Again, I think he's level changing into that guillotine. But then Ryan Spann's got a 60% takedown defense as well as 1.6 submission average. I'm looking to try and convince myself of something else here. I think Ryan Spann's going to guillotine him in the first round.
Yeah, but it's interesting because this is light heavyweight below the main event as well. So maybe one of these guys probably fight the loser of this fight. The main event.
Or... Yeah. Well, Ryan Spann's in. Ryan Spann's at 13 at the moment.
Right.
And Kutalaba's not ranked. So, I mean, this is an opportunity for Kutalaba to get into the top 15. I just don't see it happening. I mean, you look at all the guys above him as well. Even like the smaller guys like Krylov. He's like 6'3". Like, look at the guys. I mean, Johnny Walker, Paul Craig, Dominic Reyes. Like, they're all fucking huge. Anthony Smith, 6'4". I just feel like Kutalaba's, he's naturally a middleweight that just doesn't cut. It's not like he's not in bad shape. He's not in bad shape, but he's just, I don't know whether physically he's gonna stumble when it gets towards the top. Maybe not. We'll see.
I think Spann's got a pretty good chance of getting into that top part of the division.
Yeah.
Like, I think his fight against Anthony Smith was probably a little bit too much of a step for him at that point. Yeah. But I think if he gets a win here and maybe like a couple more, he'll probably be close to getting to that like title shot even, maybe.
Yeah, I can see there's some fights up here. You know, he could have success against. I won't mind seeing him in there against, you know, someone like an Uzdemir or a Nikita Krylov.
Yeah.
I mean, who's
him and Jamal.
Yeah, that'd be a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be a good one. I mean, it's like he stumbled against top 10. Serkanov's a good win. Sam Alvey, as we know, is tough, but he's most likely a middleweight. Devon Clark just doesn't like fighting. I'll say it over and over again. Like, he was turning his back in that fight. He was running away from Ryan Spann, turning his back. It was quite clear he didn't want to be there. Yeah. It's a good one. I just think Ryan Spann's too much for him.
Yeah,
I think
same.
You're right. I think he's got that top five potential.
Mm.
And Kutalaba's just, he's just always undersized and a bit over-enthusiastic. Okay, main event time. Go on then, Jamie. Give me your thoughts on this.
Well, I think these are quite similar in, well, they've got similarities in the way they fight.
Mm.
Like, they're both rush forward, but for like different reasons.
Yeah.
So like Jan, he crashes forward to kind of aim to put people up against the fence and work to the back and take like them down.
Swarm with punches and grab and bump and
And Rakic rushes in to get people on to the end of like big power shots, like the high kicks.
Yeah.
He was saying. I've got Rakic in this one because I think he's more likely to be able to do that than Jan is to be able to do that to Rakic.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. I think Jan's, I mean, obviously he's got the experience. So he's what, 28-9 for Jan compared to 14-2 for Rakic. Same reach, but that's down to the width of Jan's shoulders more than anything. But 2-inch height advantage, Rakic is gonna look and seem taller.
Yeah.
And the way that Jan defends is, it just concerns me the way he pulls back. I think it's kind of tailor-made for that high kick of Rakic. But then, you know, if Jan's able to clinch him and put him on the floor, so Rakic's takedown defense is 90%. You know, I mean, he's got very, very strong takedown defense. Jan's takedown accuracy, 53%. Higher striking output for Rakic. And, you know, the reach that he's got, you know, the reach might be the same, but the height... He's able to reach further with his legs, is what I'm trying to say. Yeah, I don't know. I'm a big fan of Jan, and I've enjoyed the fact that he won the belt. But I kind of feel like this new wave of light heavyweights, kind of similar to what we were talking about with the lightweight division, but like these guys are ready.
Mm.
You know.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they're not quite ready in the lightweight division. They all need maybe a fight or two. But you know, you look at Prochazka and Rakic and Ankalaev. It's like they're there now. And they're the ones that are dominating the top of the division. You know, the older guys, the Krylovs and the Uzdemirs, they're starting to work their way down the division now. And I kind of feel like Jan might fall into that trap. A bit like a Sarlat pit, isn't it?
Yeah. The thing is as well, like, Jan's fight against Izzy, I think Rakic is going to be a lot more harder to take down than Izzy was.
For sure.
Purely because of the physical difference.
Yeah,
like Izzy is a middleweight and Rakic is a massive like heavyweight.
Yeah,
so I think he's going to struggle there to on the physical side of things, be a lot harder for him Jan.
There was a comment actually on the war rooms, it went up last night, didn't it, and someone mentioned about the fact that Jan's got really good low kick defense. Yes, he has got good low kick defense, but there's a difference in reach here, you know what I mean? There's Izzy wasn't really throwing a great deal else, and Jan was interested in staying close to Izzy to pressure him. Like, if he's stepping and reaching and falling short against Rakic, that lead leg's still going to be vulnerable. It doesn't really... Like, low kick defense is really valuable unless you're actually the one that's throwing. If you're stepping to throw, and because, you know, he had a comparable reach with Adesanya, like he wasn't having to step as much to reach. He was more walking down, walking him into range. I still feel like Rakic, the way that he throws his low kicks, is going to be a different thing to what Izzy was doing. Yeah, I think this is a rough fight for Jan. I really do. I'd like to see a way for him to win. And I think if he does win, it's going to be a case of closing him down, body locking him, taking him to the floor, and probably taking his back and subbing him. Like, I could see a Rinicky choke finish on Jan's part, but I think it'd be really difficult to get Rakic to the floor. I think he's going to be far more composed with his takedown offense than Izzy was. He won't be overstepping like Izzy was and getting drawn in. I mean, Jan was patient in that fight. You know, he waited until, what was it, third round before he took him down? Mm. Like, so Izzy had two rounds to feel confident stepping forward without getting taken down. Rakic is not going to play that game.
No.
He's gonna know that Jan wants to close this distance. Like, I know there's only 2 inches in height, but Rakic is going to feel like a much taller guy.
I think he's more aggressive when people attempt to take him down as well, because he always strikes from the position, like the sprawl position as well. Like, he is very aggressive.
Yeah.
And he's good at, like, reversing and getting on top and putting in ground and pound as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that bind he had on Anthony Smith, where he went under his underhook and over his leg.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very, very slick. Yeah, I've got Rakic.
Yeah, same.
I've got Rakic. I'd like to see Jan win, get another shot to the belt, but I think the timing with this division and the way it's moving on, I think we've got a bracket of like 6'4" murderers that are coming through that are all going to just dominate the top of this division.
I really want to see Rakic against Prochazka as well.
Oh, I'll be a banger.
It's like there's a fight in the light heavyweight division.
Yeah. But then where do you put Ankalaev? Where does he sit in amongst them? Like, so say if you move the old boys out, say if Jiří beats Teixeira and Rakic beats Błachowicz, so then you've got Prochazka, Rakic, and Ankalaev in that top little bracket. Who's the best out of those three? Put them in order.
I think Prochazka's top.
Okay, Prochazka's top. Ankalaev or Rakic next?
I'd go Rakic.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then Ankalaev next. Okay, so the top of the light heavyweight division in 3 months' time could be Prochazka as the champion, with Rakic as the number one contender and Ankalaev at number two.
Mm-hmm.
I could see that happening.
I think so.
So who's the next one to join them down the division? Which one of the names? Like, Santos is probably on his way out. Smith, I don't know as we're going to get a resurgence from Smith.
See, Dom Reyes, I still think he's up there.
Yeah.
I think, because he's still young, he was the closest guy to beat John Jones in recent times. So I feel like he's still got, has he been out injured? Because he hasn't fought since Prochazka.
I think he has.
Because I think he's still in that mix of, or he could at least work his way back up to that top five.
Three losses in a row, though. It's rough.
Yeah.
It's rough.
Who are they? Is it John Jones, Prochazka, and
Jan?
Jan
lost to Jan, didn't they? Like, we've got Paul Craig, who could keep snapping triangles on people. I do feel like Paul Craig's got to level up his striking for those top few, though. Because if he isn't able to get Ankalaev, well, I mean, I know obviously he's got a win over Ankalaev, but we all know how that was going until the triangle. You know, if he's not able to sub Ankalaev or able to take Prochazka or Rakic down, I think he really struggles with that little group. Everybody else, I mean, I think Anthony Smith is a good fight for Paul Craig, but then I'm looking further down. You know, maybe a Ryan Spann. I feel like Krylov is not quite going to make it. I don't see any consistency in Johnny Walker, not in his base skill set to be able to do it. He needs that wildness back in his game where he catches people. But he's not going to catch everybody, is he? It's like Prince Nassim, you know?
I always find the light heavyweight division this strange division.
Yeah.
It's like a bit of a floater division.
Yeah.
not to say that there's anything wrong with it, but it's just, it's just the strangeness between the middleweight and the, it's like all light heavyweights are just in shape heavyweights kind of thing.
But then, like, there are a few guys at heavyweight that you could quite easily see moving down to light heavyweight. Like, I'd be interested to see what weight Chris Daukaus could get down to.
Yeah.
You know, because, and I, like, Ivanov, like, I could quite easily see him making, like, I think he's like 6'1".
Yeah.
Like, he's not particularly big. You've got to wonder where they're carrying the weight and if it could come off. Like, there are definitely some guys, like, of course, like Curtis Blaydes, Derek Lewis, Tom Aspinall, they're never making...
Yeah, just physically big, frame-wise and everything,
I think even if you strip all the body fat off Tom Aspinall, he would still have to cut a decent amount of weight to get to light heavy, and you don't want to do that to him. But, yeah.
It's just Jared Cannonier's proved that.
Right.
Like, massively. Going from a heavyweight down to a shredded middleweight.
Shredded middleweight.
Yeah.
And being ranked number two in the division.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. Interesting. Okay, so we're both going with Rakic, are we?
Yeah.
Sad face. I'd love to see Jan get the win here, but I just think Rakic is too much. It's that drifting away that Jan does where you're like, oh man, it makes me nervous. Makes me nervous. Okay, all right. Quick shout out to our sponsors, xbrain.co.uk. Go and check out xbrain. There's all kinds of good products there. Proteins, collagens, brain enhancers, rehydration supplements, all your Onnit products are there, as well as Four Sigmatic and Neurofuel. And this, honestly, you'll be there all day. Enter the code Outlaw and you'll get 20% off your order. And we have this weekend's drop, 4 p.m. on Sunday. We'll be dropping the new Full Reptile Muay Thai design. We have four products. We have this t-shirt. We have the chocolate brown printed front and back. We have like an olive green hoodie, which I'll show you right now before we take this to the gym and shoot it. There we go. Olive green hoodie. Lightweight hoodie for summer. Obviously, we still want to be warm when we're training. Still want to get a sweat on, but these are a bit lighter, so you're not dehydrating yourself. And we have a sweatshirt as well, which I'll be wearing later at the gym. They're all available at 4 p.m. on Sunday on fullreptile.co.uk, so go and check that out. All right. Nice one, Jamie.
Nice one, man.
All right. Let's get to the gym. Catch you later.